He glanced at Alec, who was looking wet-eyed, and said, "Alec, go fetch." "Damn, the priest," Niels said suddenly, interrupting Ollie. Noting his expression, Ollie narrowed his eyes.
"What? Is there something wrong with Father Archibald?"
"Not wrong, exactly," Niels assured him. "But Edith wanted to have a word with him when we arrived, and Alec said,
The stable master told me he rode out this morning just ere we arrived with Sid and Greer in the chests,"
Alec said, interrupting Niels. "Damn," Ollie breathed with a frown.
"Aye, that's how we lost Father McKenna,"
Dougal reminded him grimly.
"What?"
Cam asked with confusion. "Our last priest was Father McKenna," Niels explained. "But when Dougal brought Maureen here and they hoped to marry, he suddenly rode off, never to be heard from again.
We suspect Maureen's brother and cousin had something to do with it,"
Dougal said grimly.
"They would have no wanted him to marry us and ruin their plans. I'm sure this is not the same as McKenna,"
Greer said soothingly.
"Archibald is fine and will return tonight or in the morn."
"And if he does not, Drummond is not far from here,"
Edith pointed out.
"Aye,"
Niels smiled.
"Our priest could marry you."
"And MacDonald is close too," Sid added. "If we held the wedding there, you could meet Alpin and see your nieces."
"Failing that, there is Carmichael,"
Dougal put in.
"Or Sinclair,"
Cam added.
"We'd be pleased to host your wedding."
Ollie stared at them all, his heart warmed by all the offers, but panic setting into his brain at the thought of having to accept one over the others.
"I'm thinking we should just give Father Archibald a chance to return,"
Uncle Acare said before Ollie could be forced to choose between the many offers.
"If he does not return tonight, we can send some men out after him first thing in the morn. If they do not bring him back, then we'll have to consider an alternative. But at least here, we could all attend,"
he pointed out.
"Including the people of Buchanan she'll become lady of."
"Aye," Dougal said with a nod.
"That would be best."
"Let us hope Father Archibald returns, then,"
Niels murmured.
"Aye,"
Uncle Acare agreed.
"Now, why do we not let these two get some rest? It's been a long day, and tomorrow maybe even longer for them, if Father Archibald returns."
No one argued. Everyone turned and made their way from the room, murmuring good nights and sleep wells as they went. Jetta watched Ollie walk the others out, her thoughts a bit confused. She was having trouble adjusting to the thought that he was not really her husband. Yet she reminded herself they would marry on the morrow, or as soon as they could find a priest. Still, she had thought of him as husband for, well, for the entire history that she could remember. Sighing, she gave her head a little shake. According to Uncle Acare, Jetta stopped the thought as she realized he wasn't her uncle yet. Although maybe he was. According to Uncle Acare, she and Ollie were married by something and repute. She couldn't remember what he'd said. She did remember his saying they were hand-fasted, considered married by law. So Ollie was her husband after all. And these people who had treated her like family were her family. But she'd feel better if they had a proper marriage, blessed by a priest. The sound of the door closing caught her ear, and Jetta glanced up as Ollie turned back to the room. She bit her lip briefly and then asked,
"Do you think Father Archibald will return tomorrow?"
"If we're lucky, he will,"
Ollie muttered as he crossed to the bed.
"I've no desire to offend anyone by choosing where to marry if he doesn't."
"Oh, aye. That could be tricky, could it not?"
She agreed and lowered her head to peer at her hands as she considered the problem.
If they chose MacDonald as the spot to wed, and that would be her preference since she'd like to meet her soon-to-be nieces, it might leave Niels Dougal and even the Sinclairs offended.
Aye, very tricky, Ollie agreed. I've no desire to inadvertently hurt anyone's feelings. So we shall have to hope luck is with us this time.
Nodding, she glanced around only to frown when she did not see him anywhere in the room.
Unfortunately, well, I hate to admit this to you for fear you'll change your mind about marrying me,
he continued, his voice the only proof of his presence.
I am not the luckiest of men, my love.
Following the sound of his voice, Jetta peered over the side of the bed to see him lying on a pallet there, one arm over his face. She was frowning at his words until the last two sank in. My love. It was the first time he'd used an endearment when addressing her, and it made her heart melt. She enjoyed the feeling for a moment and then scowled at the man on the floor and said,
I do not understand how you can say that. You seem to me to be a very lucky man indeed.
Ollie shifted his arm aside and blinked up at her in surprise. Probably partially because he didn't expect to see her there, hanging over the side of the bed above him. But also because of her words.
What? He asked with disbelief. How can you say I'm lucky?
How can you say you're not?
She countered at once.
Have you seen my face? He asked dryly.
Oh, piffle!
Jetta said, pulling back and dropping to lie on the bed with disgust.
What the devil does that mean?
Ollie asked, sitting up so he could see her again. When she didn't respond, except a shrug, he asked, How would you like to run around with a face so ugly bairns run away crying, and women scream in horror when they see you?
Oh, they did not do that,
she said, turning to Ian with disbelief.
They did,
he assured her bitterly. Frowning at this news, Jetta examined his scar more closely, and then admitted,
I suppose, at first, when the scar was still red and raw, it might have caused a stir.
Damned right it did, he growled resentfully. The first year I hardly left the keep to avoid the reactions it caused.
And the second?
She asked. It was a little better, he admitted reluctantly.
And no doubt it was better still the year after that?
She suggested. He shrugged unhappily. Jetta considered him briefly, and then asked,
Would you really rather never have been scarred, and be married to Adara Stewart, then?
Who told you about Adara?
Ollie asked with surprise.
A couple of people have mentioned her,
she said evasively.
Now answer the question. Would you rather be unscarred and married to Adara?
Good God, nay, he growled. She was not at all the woman I thought her. I found out things about her after the betrothal was broken that...
He shook his head. I made a lucky escape there.
Lucky?
She asked innocently.
Hey, do you ken she tried to seduce Sinclair at court?
He asked with outrage, not catching the lucky bit. And that was ere I was ever injured. He said he refused her offer because he ken she was betrothed to another, though he did not ken it was me at the time. That was ere we knew each other so well, but I'm sure there were others she offered herself to who had less honour.
Mouth tight, he said. And she beat her mate. Mavis told me that after the betrothal was broken too. Beat her something fierce once, right in front of Mavis for merely dropping a brush. Had we married, she may have tried to beat the servants here. Nay, that wench was no the lady I had always thought her to be.
A lucky escape indeed, then, that you were scarred and she broke the betrothal,
she murmured.
Aye.
He nodded, and then glanced to her sharply. His eyes narrowed. Your sin had I no been scarred, I'd be married to the wench.
And stuck with her for a lifetime,
Jetta pointed out solemnly.
I think 2 or 3 years of misery as your scar healed was a good exchange for avoiding a lifetime of misery with Lady Adara Stewart.
Aye, he muttered. When you put it that way, mayhap I did get off lucky. Gaze softening, he added. Especially since I now get to marry you instead.
Your luck was my luck as well, my lad. For I get to have you to husband.
She assured him with a smile, and then added,
And I get your very large, very loving and caring family as my own too.
Ollie smiled crookedly at that.
They may be nosy and interfering, but meanwhile...
Aye, and there is another example of your good luck,
she assured him.
Mostly, he said solemnly,
and she knew he was thinking of Ewan, the brother he'd lost.
Nay, not mostly,
Jetta insisted gently.
Husband, you have 6 brothers and a sister who all love you and have rushed here to be of aid if they can. Just their having survived to this stage in life is lucky. Your family has lost only 1 of 9 children. Do you not know how rare that is? Most families lose 2x that number ere their children are out of breeches. But your family lost only the 1. And you have 6 brothers and 1 sister who are not only still healthy and well, but who love and care about you and are here when you need them,
she said, and felt her eyes tear up as she said it. For she knew she had not been so lucky, else her family would not have been trying to send her off to someone she wasn't even betrothed to, and whom she apparently had feared would kill her.
Jetta knew she would have done everything in her power to prevent a sister from such an end. Pushing that thought away, she continued,
And then, you were lucky with the wound you took.
Aye, the scar kept me from marrying Adara, he acknowledged. I agree with you there.
I'm not talking about that part now,
she said solemnly.
Do you realize had your attacker been standing even 1 inch or 2 nearer, you would not have survived the blow? Or he could have been using a mace rather than a sword, or something else which surely would have killed you. The very fact that you are alive is another instance of luck being on your side.
I suppose it is, he acknowledged.
And what is it but luck that you were blessed with such good looks that the injury barely detracts from them? Or that God graced you with an intelligence, kindness and chivalry I am lucky to have encountered. Nay, husband, you are not unlucky. Or, if you are, then your misfortune has been my good fortune. For had you not been injured, and had your betrothed not refused to marry you, then I would not now get to marry you myself. And I know how lucky I am to be able to call you husband.
Seeing the doubt on his face and determined to rid him of it, she said,
You are a good man, Ollie Buchanan, and that alone makes me lucky. But...
Closing her eyes, Jetta bit her lip, briefly. She did not want him to have any doubt that she was marrying him for him, and not because she thought him a safe haven. But the only way she could think to do that was to admit. Straightening her shoulders... She opened her eyes and admitted what she thought he needed to hear.
I am very much looking forward to the marriage bed, husband. In fact, I am sore disappointed the priest is not here and we are not already married. For your kisses fire my blood and your touch makes me tremble and shiver with pleasure, and I should like nothing more than for you to take me into your arms and...
Her words died as Ollie suddenly lunged up from the floor. And covered her lips with his.
Chapter 14. Jetta opened to Ollie at once when his mouth covered hers. She then gasped and clutched at his shoulders as he scooped her up and settled on the bed with her in his lap. Twisting her upper body toward him, Jetta kissed him back, meeting his thrusting tongue and dueling with it as it invaded. At first, all he did was kiss her. Long, deep, demanding kisses that had her moaning and clutching at him as he clasped her face in his hands and tilted her head in the direction he wanted. Jetta went without protest, tilting one way and then the other as he kissed her thoroughly, and then one hand dropped along her throat to slide over her chest to one breast, where it stopped to squeeze and cup her, squeeze and cup in a slow, steady rhythm to match his kiss. She hardly noticed when his second hand slid away from her face or that he was working on the fastenings of her gown until part of it suddenly fell away. It now only covered one breast, held there by the hand squeezing her eager flesh. His other hand found the now naked breast and began to knead that one too. Jetta groaned as the rough skin of his palm and fingers added to her excitement and she arched into both hands, her kiss becoming a bit frantic. Ollie immediately removed the first hand long enough for the cloth to drop away, and when he then continued to caress that breast too with his rough bare hand, she muttered a plea into his mouth that even she didn't understand. In the next moment she was crying out in protest when he broke their kiss, but then he leaned her back against his arm to allow his mouth to trail its way down her neck. By the time his mouth reached and replaced his hand at her breast, she was twisting her head and moaning in one long sound of need as he took as much of her breast into his mouth as he could fit, and then drew his mouth away until only the nipple remained.
"Oh, husband,"
she groaned, clasping his head and shifting in his lap as need coalesced in her lower stomach and seemed to slide down between her legs.
"I love,"
he growled against her skin and then eased her onto the bed and settled half on top and half beside her. Shifting his attention to the other breast now, she felt his legs slide between hers and nudge against her core. Jetta instinctively closed her legs around his knee, riding it as he eased it back and forth against her. Releasing her nipple a moment later, he growled,
"I'm not gonna bed you, lass."
Jetta blinked her eyes open and peered at him blankly, unable to speak or react. Her body was humming to the tune he was playing and she was having trouble concentrating on anything. Seeming to realize that, Ollie smiled crookedly and then said,
"God, you're beautiful like this."
Jetta glanced down the length of her body. The top of her gown was now tangled around her waist, the skirt pushed up almost as high, and as she watched, his hands released her breast and drifted idly down the slip between her legs as his knee shifted aside. His first touch had her bucking beneath him and crying out, but he quickly covered her mouth with his to silence her as his fingers began to dance across her eager flesh, circling and nudging the center of her excitement there. Just when she thought she could not bear it a moment longer, Jetta felt something push into her. Since he was dressed and only his knee and hand were anywhere near the area, she thought it must be a finger, and then didn't care as it began to slide in and out while his thumb continued to caress the nub of her excitement.
"Oh, husband, please,"
Jetta gasped, breaking their kiss and then frowned as she realized what she said.
"I mean, Ollie."
"Call me husband. I will be soon enough, and I like it,"
he murmured, nuzzling her breast.
"It fires my blood."
"Aye, I'll call you husband then,"
she gasped as his tongue rasped across her nipple. Ollie groaned as if the words truly did fire his blood and then claimed one nipple again with his mouth as his hand began to move faster between her legs, his finger plunging deeper.
"Oh, husband,"
Jetta cried, instinctively raising the knee not covered by his legs and pushing herself up into the caress,
Oh, please, husband. Oh, please, husband. Oh, please.
Jetta breathed the litany, hardly aware she was doing it as she struggled toward what he was offering, and then a knock sounded at the door and they both froze. Jetta had to bite her lip to hold back her moan of protest when Ollie let her nipples slip from his mouth and lifted his head to glance toward the door. Surely whoever it was would have assumed them already asleep and left if he did not say anything, she thought as he called.
What?
Father Archibald just returned,
Alec called out cheerfully through the door.
Dougal's gone down to the church to tell him he wants to marry first thing in the morn.
Ollie turned sharply to Jetta, took in her wide eyes, her erect nipples and his hand buried between her legs, and growled.
Tonight.
What?
Alec and Jetta both said with surprise.
We marry tonight,
he answered, withdrawing his hand from between her legs and pulling her from the bed as he got up.
Did you say you want to marry Jetta tonight?
Alec asked, as if unsure he was hearing correctly.
Aye,
Ollie growled, beginning to tug Jetta's gown back into place.
Go tell him so he can ready himself. And tell Sid to get everyone down to the church. Everyone. The people of Buchanan'll want to witness their laird claiming his bride. And tell Conran to see that lots of ale, cider and ishke beer are brought out. They'll want to celebrate after.
Alec grunted something that might have been an acknowledgement, and then they heard his footsteps moving away.
Are you sure you want to marry tonight?
Jetta asked, her body humming with need. All she wanted was for him to strip her gown off and finish what he'd started. The wedding could wait, she thought, and said,
We could always marry on the morrow. 'Twould give us more time to prepare. And 'tis late now.
Finished putting her gown back in order, Ollie clasped her face between his hands and kissed her, a deep, hungry kiss full of need and passion. Moaning Jetta melted into him at once and went willingly when he backed her up. She was hoping he was urging her toward the bed, and he did, but not as she expected. He backed her up until the bedpost pressed into her spine, and then reached down behind her leg and lifted it up to pull around his hip, leaving her balanced on one leg as he ground himself intimately against her. Breaking their kiss then, he pressed into her again and asked,
Can you feel that I want you?
Aye, husband,
Jetta gasped, pressing back against the harness rubbing against her.
I want you so bad it aches, he admitted, grinding against her again. I want nothing more than to strip you naked, toss you on the bed and thrust into you so hard and so deep you scream your pleasure for all to hear.
Oh, aye, husband.
Jetta almost sobbed, tightening her leg around him.
But I want all who hear to ken you're my wife when I draw that scream from you, love,
he added, easing away from her a bit.
Oh.
Jetta breathed as disappointment crashed down on her at the realization that he didn't plan to pleasure her now. Cupping her face, he said gently,
I'll no take you ere we're wed when the priest is here to do it.
Kissing her gently on the nose, he smiled crookedly and assured her,
"'Twill not take long."
"'Nay,'
she agreed weakly. Smile turning wicked then, he slid his hand under her skirt and along the inside of her raised leg, until his fingers brushed against her slick skin, and he added,
And I'll enjoy kenning you're still wet for me when the priest asks, do you take me to be your husband?
Husband?
She groaned in what was supposed to be a shocked voice, but sounded more like a plea as he fondled her. He ran his finger around the tight bud of her excitement and then plunged it into her, and pressed firmly as he growled by her ear.
I promise. Minutes after the priest finishes marrying us, I'll have your skirt up and be thrusting into you with the real thing. And I'll no stop until you're satisfied.
Oh, God.
Jetta groaned when he eased his finger back out and let her leg drop. When he then caught her hand to lead her to the door, she followed, docilely. But her mind was now spinning a bit. She was sorry at the interruption. She'd been so very close to finding the release he'd given her on the table at the lodge and could have wept at the interruption. On the other hand, she knew the wedding would only delay that release. She was going to be married, and properly bedded tonight. Jetta had no doubt about that, and she had no doubt her husband would see to it she found her release once they were back here. The problem was, he would follow it up with the carrot and the bread loaf, and she wasn't at all sure she would like that. Although Jetta encouraged herself, he had pushed his finger inside of her and that had not hurt. Mayhap his carrot wouldn't either. That was wishful thinking, and she knew it. Jetta might be missing many of her memories, but there were certain things she wasn't, and one of those was the church's claims that the joining was painful and meant to be a punishment for Eve's sins. At least that's what their priest had claimed. Jetta recognized that she'd regained another memory, but didn't really care. It was one she could have done without. Besides, she was quite sure she'd heard that the joining was painful elsewhere, too. At least the first time. She remembered those teachings as clearly as she recalled how to walk, talk, and play chess. So suspected she was in for a night of sweet pleasure, followed by agony. It left her a little less than eager as Ollie escorted her out of the bedchamber.
"Alex says you want to marry tonight."
Jetta glanced ahead at that announcement and spotted Sade, leading Edith, Maureen and Joe toward them in the hall outside the bedchamber.
"Aye," Holly said at once.
Sade nodded.
"Then we have to prepare Jetta."
Ollie scowled at the claim.
"She does not need preparing. She's fine."
"She is far from fine," Maureen countered with dismay.
"Aye,"
Edith agreed.
"Her call is missing, her hair a mess, and her dress wrinkled. She cannot be married and presented to the people of Buchanan as their new lady like that."
When Ollie frowned and hesitated, Joe said soothingly,
"With four of us working on her, we can have her ready in a matter of minutes. And you could do with a change of plaid as well, my lord. You are a bit wrinkled, too. And you've wine or something on your sleeve," Sade added. "Joe's right. You should change."
Ollie glanced down at his sleeve. Kirsten then nodded and said with resignation,
"Fine. I'll need to fetch a fresh plaid from my room first, though."
"You can change in there," Maureen said at once. "We can use the room Dougal and I are in. The dresses are in chests in the hall anyway, so we need not go into the master bedchamber at all."
Nodding again, he paused long enough to squeeze Jetta's hand and offer her a smile before turning to head back the way they'd come.
"I think she should wear the pale green dress," Maureen announced the minute the door closed behind Ollie.
"I think you're right,"
Edith announced, moving away toward one of the half-dozen chests in the hall. The one she stopped by and opened was on the opposite side of the door to the master bedroom. Jetta glanced from Edith to Maureen and said,
"But it is still in the chest. It will be wrinkled."
"Nay, it will no," Maureen said with a grin. "I took it out the minute the men brought up the chests. I suspected something like this would happen."
"Well, that explains why it's no here,"
Edith said dryly, and then frowned at the contents of the chest she'd just opened.
"What is it?"
Sade asked, moving toward Edith to peer down into the chest itself.
"The gowns are all crushed,"
Edith pointed out as Jetta, Maureen and Joe joined them.
"It looks like something heavy was lying on them."
"Aye,"
Sade murmured and bent to pick up something poking out from under some of the material. Straightening, she held up a finely crafted knife with an ebony handle that had ornate carvings on it.
"Something heavy like the person who dropped this, mayhap."
Joe said, eyes narrowing.
"Aye. Mayhap even a certain archer who likes to push ladies downstairs."
"'Tis a Balak dagger,"
Jetta said softly, staring at the two oval swellings on the guard and noting the figures carved into them.
I think I've seen that knife before. Can you remember where?
Sid asked. But when Jetta began to concentrate on trying to remember, she concealed the blade up her sleeve and squawked,
Nay, do it right. Tis your wedding night. The last thing you need is a headache.
But,
Jetta began in protest.
Nay, Sid is right,
Joe interrupted, grasping Jetta's shoulders and turning her toward the room where Dougal and Maureen were staying.
Tomorrow is soon enough to try to remember. For now, we need to... What the devil are you doing, Sid?
Jetta turned with a start at that comment to see that Joe was gaping at the other woman, who had stepped into the chest and was now dropping to crouch inside it.
Seeing how big it is,
Sid said dryly, and then crouched down and made herself as small as she could inside. Her voice was slightly muffled when she asked,
Is there a lot of room left over? Could a man fit?
Aye,
Edith said solemnly.
'Tis a big chest. There is at least a foot of space above you, not counting the lid. And several inches in front, behind, and on either side of you, too.
Maureen added with a nod.
Even a man as big as one of our husbands would fit.
That's what I thought,
Sid said with satisfaction, straightening again. Stepping out, she muttered.
I suspected the men were wrong about the attacker using the passages. Only family members ken about them. 'Tis hard to believe they did not check the chests, though,
Joe said with a frown.
They probably did,
Sid said with a shrug, and then pointed out.
The dagger was under one of the dresses. No doubt the attacker pulled out one of the gowns, climbed in and pulled the gown over himself. Then, when the men opened it, they saw only gowns.
Maureen finished with a nod.
They were no a thought to drag the gowns out to be sure that was all that was in the chests. They knew we'd packed them full.
Aye,
Edith muttered, and then asked grimly.
But where are all the gowns from that chest?
Well, the pale green one is in my room,
Maureen pointed out.
And Jetta is wearing the dark green.
Pausing abruptly, she grimaced and said,
I am sorry. Would you prefer Sorka or Jetta?
In truth, I am more used to Jetta too now, and prefer it.
Good. Then there will be less confusion when you're visiting and our Sorka is there,
Sid said with a smile.
True,
Jetta agreed with a grin. They all smiled, and then Edith cleared her throat and said,
Back to the dresses. I ken Jetta is wearing one, and the pale green one is in your room, Maureen. But that still leaves a number of dresses missing from this chest.
Aye, Joe agreed.
And when we sorted the gowns at the lodge, we put all the ones we thought looked best with Jetta's colouring in it. There are only two left in here now,
Sid said as she lifted out the top dress.
The attacker must have planned ahead and removed most of the dresses to prepare it as a quick hiding spot,
Edith said thoughtfully.
Aye, but where would he put the dresses when he removed them?
Joe asked with irritation. They were all silent for a minute, and then Sid dropped the gown she'd been holding and slammed the chest lid closed.
They must be here somewhere. He could hardly cart half a dozen dresses out of the keep without someone noticing. We'll take a look around for them tomorrow. Tonight, we have other things to tend.
Aye,
Joe agreed, turning to smile at Jetta.
But what about the chest?
Edith asked as they ushered Jetta toward Maureen's room.
Shall we not tell the men about it? We can tell the men about it after the ceremony,
Sid decided.
But no, Ollie. He does not need to worry about such and the like until tomorrow. We didn't want to ruin Jetta's big night.
Aye.
Maureen nudged Jetta with an elbow and gave her a teasing grin.
Tonight he should only be concerned with pleasure.
Oh, aye.
Edith crooned on a laugh.
Stop,
Jetta said, half laughing at their teasing but wholly blushing, and more than a little nervous about the night ahead. Apparently noting her worry, Joe smiled sympathetically and put a soothing arm around her.
"'Twill be fine. It may hurt a little at first, but Ollie seems a kind man, and he definitely has tender feelings for you. He will be gentle with you.
Do you think so?
Jetta asked hopefully.
Of course he will. Ollie is a sweetheart. He'll definitely be gentle.
She assured her, and then added,
That linen Rory wrapped around your ankle seems to be working nicely. You're hardly limping.
Oh, aye.
Jetta muttered distractedly.
But I did not mean, do you really think Ollie will be gentle with me? I already knew he would. I was questioning, do you really think Ollie has tender feelings for me?
She explained.
I mean, I know he wants me, but he has said he was not sure he loved me. Mayhap all he feels for me is desire and gratitude that I am not put off by his scar.
And you want his love,
Sid said quietly.
I love him,
she pointed out.
Are you sure you do?
Sid asked softly.
Or is it possible all you feel is desire and gratitude for his saving your life?
Jetta
began, and then paused and gave the question the consideration it deserved. Was it possible that she only loved him because she desired him and was grateful for all he'd done for her?
Good God!
Giving a start at that intrusion into her thoughts, Jetta turned to peer at Ollie with surprise. He was all finished getting ready. He'd changed, brushed his hair to a fine sheen, and even had a quick wash in the basin in their chamber, from what she could tell. The man was ready, and they hadn't even begun to start on her. They hadn't even reached Maureen's room yet.
You've no even started,
Ollie squawked, as if he'd read her mind.
We are going now,
Sade said firmly, catching Jetta's arm and ushering her the last few steps to the door to Maureen and Dougal's room. Opening the door, she urged Jetta inside and called out to her brother.
Go on and head to the church. We'll be right behind you. This will not take a minute.
The other women had rushed into the room as she spoke, and the moment the last word was out, Sade pushed the door closed. Turning to Jetta, she smiled wryly and said,
It matters little if you love him now, or he loves you. You want each other, and, more important, you like each other, and that's a good start. More than many begin marriage with.
Liking is more important than wanting,
Jetta asked with interest.
Oh, aye,
Joe assured her as the women set to work on removing the gown she wore.
Passion is like the waves, rising and falling with the hour, day and season. Friendship, though, is much more steady. It will get you through those days when passion is the last thing on your mind. Like when you've a crying baby on your shoulder and two chewing up your teats and you're so exhausted you can no see straight. But he thinks to cheer you with a little Hochmagandy.
Sade said dryly.
You'll want to take a battle axe to his head then.
Jetta's eyes widened.
But friendship will stay your hand,
Joe said with amusement as the gown Jetta wore dropped to the floor, and Maureen approached with the pale green one she was to wear. As they lifted it over her head to put it on her, Joe continued,
And in a couple hours, days or mayhap even a week, when you're well rested and recovered, you will again be interested in that Hochmagandy he suggested earlier, and the sweet release he can offer.
Aye, and will be the same for him,
Maureen assured her as the gown dropped into place and they set to fastening her stays.
He will have days where everything that can go wrong will, or that he's so blind with exhaustion that Hochmagandy is the last thing on his mind, and nothing you can do can raise his interest.
With the stays finished, they turned their attention to her hair, as Maureen admitted dryly.
Mind ye, those days are much less frequent for the men. At least they are with Dougal. But your friendship will see you through those days too,
Edith assured her.
But that will no be for a while,
Sade assured her.
Ye and Ollie will be in your room more than you're out for the next little while.
Aye.
So, 'tis good we're here to help catch the attacker while you're busy,
Nurine murmured, and admitted,
I can no wait to tell the men that we discovered how the attacker eluded them.
Aye, Joe said with a smile. They will be so annoyed.
No doubt, Sid said cheerfully as they all stepped back to survey their handiwork.
Lovely,
Edith pronounced.
Aye, perfect.
Murine murmured and then turned Jetta toward the mirror on the wall, so she could see herself as she added,
You canna even tell they cut her hair away.
Jetta peered at her reflection and blinked, barely recognizing herself. They'd made her look lovely.
Thank you,
she whispered.
No thanks are needed,
Sid assured her with a smile.
You're a member of the family now, or will be once we get you to the church.
Speaking of which, shall we, ladies?
Joe said, heading for the door. Jetta found herself hustled from the room and hurried down the hall by the four lovely, laughing ladies, who were about to become her family.
Chapter 15.
Congratulations, Moert. We're all right happy for you and look forward to toasting to your happiness together.
Thank you, Fergus, Ollie said sincerely.
Jetta smiled and thanked the man too. She'd never met him before, but suspected he was one of her husband's soldiers. Many soldiers and servants had stopped to congratulate them since the ceremony had ended.
We should go back and toast your happiness, Dougal said with a smile, slapping his brother on the back as the last of the people of Buchanan moved away and started back to the keep.
Jetta saw the frown that briefly crossed her new husband's face, and then he smiled and nodded.
Aye, but first Jetta and I need to thank Father Archibald for performing the service so late and after his long journey back.
Oh, aye. Dougal glanced toward the priest who was talking to people near the door to the church.
You and the others, go ahead, Ollie suggested lightly. We'll be right behind you.
Nodding, Dougal slapped him on the back one more time, and then turned to gather the others and usher them back toward the keep, telling them that Ollie and Jetta would follow in a moment.
Come.
Ollie swept her up in his arms and turned, not toward the church or the keep, but away from both and ran through the darkness straight into the stables.
What are we doing here?
She asked with confusion as he entered the stables and slowed to a walk.
Ere we left our room, I made a promise to you that within minutes after the ceremony, we'd return and finish what I'd started, he reminded her solemnly, carrying her past the stalls to the bales at the back of the stables.
Howbeit, if we return to the keep, I'll no be able to honour that vow. Our people will insist on a toast, and then another, and it'll be hours ere we can retire to our room, he pointed out.
Aye,
she agreed, blushing.
But do we stop here for a little bit? He added, lowering his head to nuzzle her ear. I can keep my promise.
Oh,
she breathed as he raised his head again. Ollie peered at her silently for a moment, as if memorizing her features, and then bent his head to kiss her. Jetta's mouth opened on a gasp of surprise as he released her legs, and his tongue slid in to fill the open space at once. At first she was too startled to respond, but then his hands drifted down over her body, massaging her back and pressing her closer before dropping to cup her bottom and lift her off the ground, until he could press hard against the junction between her legs. His tongue thrust into her mouth in time with his grinding into her, and Jetta gave in with a groan and started to kiss him back. It seemed like she'd barely started to respond, though, when he tore his mouth away. Shifting his lips to her ear, he nuzzled it as he growled.
I'm still hard for you, love. Are ye still wet for me?
I...
She halted on a gasp as his hand shifted to the back of her thigh and drew her leg up and around his hip again, as he had in their room earlier. He then slid his hand under her skirt and along her leg to find out for himself.
"Oh, God, Yar,"
he groaned, and then covered her mouth with his own and kissed her passionately as he began to caress her. Moaning, Jetta clutched at his shoulders and kissed him eagerly back, her hips moving into the caress. She broke their kiss on a gasping cry when he suddenly slid a finger into her, and Ollie returned to her ear, this time nibbling and sucking at the lobe as his hand worked its magic.
"Husband, please,"
Jetta whimpered, and sure her legs were about to give out, clutched at him desperately.
"Please what?" he growled, thrusting harder. "Give me your pleasure, wife."
Oh.
Ollie cut off her cry with his mouth, kissing her deeply and continuing to thrust his finger into her as she convulsed and trembled in his arms. Jetta rode the wave he'd placed her on, expecting the lazy, relaxed feeling to claim her again as it had that time at the lodge. But instead, her excitement began to build again as he continued to caress her. Tearing his mouth away, Ollie growled,
"I want to taste your pleasure."
Jetta blinked her eyes open with confusion at those words, and then gaped down at him in dismay when he suddenly dropped to kneel before her.
"Husband,"
she hissed with horror, her gaze shooting to the open stable doors and back as he caught the hem of her gown.
"What are you... Oh, God!"
she gasped as he disappeared under her skirt. Trying to catch his head in the material, she whispered,
"What if someone comes in?"
He pulled his head back out briefly to say,
"The gates are closed and the bridge is up. No one will need the stables tonight. And Fergus is the stable master."
"Fergus?"
Jetta echoed blankly as his head disappeared under her skirt again, and then recalled the last man to congratulate them. "The man looking forward to drinking to their happiness," she recalled, and then fell backward as Ollie urged her legs apart. Fortunately, she fell onto the bales he'd stood her in front of. The moment she did, Ollie used his hold on her legs to shift her to his liking, and then tasted her pleasure as he'd said he wished to do. Covering her mouth with one hand to keep from screaming, Jetta reached for something to ground herself as he set to work on her. All she found was straw, but she dug her fingers in, tearing at it for all she was worth as Ollie seemed to try to devour her whole. His tongue moved up, down and around, and then he suckled at her tender folds before concentrating on the center of her excitement. He did that for what seemed like an eternity, urging her toward the release she craved, and then pulling her back by shifting his attentions until she thought she would go mad, or punch him if he did not stop driving her mad like that. The thought nearly made her laugh, as Jetta realized that dear God Sade was right. And then Ollie suddenly slid a finger inside of her and got serious with his mouth, and the combination set her off. Screaming into her hand, she bucked on the bale as her release hit her, her mind drifting briefly loose as sensation overwhelmed it. Jetta didn't know how much time had passed when she realized that Ollie hadn't stopped what he was doing. He was continuing to work on her with his fingers and mouth, though he'd eased away from the now sensitive nub. And then his finger seemed to grow inside her, which she knew was impossible, so could only assume he'd eased a second finger in to join the first. He was also moving them differently, she realized, spreading them slightly. Spreading her, she realized, trying to prepare her for...
Oh?
Jetta panted into her palm, losing interest in trying to figure out what he was doing as his tongue returned to the center of her excitement again.
Dear God, she couldn't. He had to stop. She could not. Husband!
She cried out as she did find release again, and her body began to shudder and jerk. Jetta was so caught up in the waves rolling over her that she hardly noticed when Ollie withdrew from beneath her skirt, stepped between her legs and clasped her hips. She definitely noticed, though, when he thrust into her. That was a little hard to miss. And that was when everything kind of stopped for her. It wasn't because it was excruciatingly painful, as she'd feared it might be. In fact, Jetta wouldn't have described it as painful at all. It was more uncomfortable, like trying to squeeze into a dress that was too small. Or maybe the opposite of that. She was the dress that was too small, and he was the one trying to squeeze in. Although he'd already squeezed in. He was there, all of him, and unmoving as her body struggled to accommodate this new experience.
"Are you all right, love?"
Blinking her eyes open, Jetta lifted her head to peer at him. His sword lay on the bale next to her, and his plaid was gone, his shirt the only thing remaining. But he'd pulled the front up and behind his head while leaving his arms in the sleeves, so that it was more of a halter. A shoulder halter that left his beautiful chest and everything else on display. Well, everything but where he was joined to her, she thought.
"Love, are you all right?"
Raising her eyes quickly, Jetta met his gaze and frowned when she noted the pained expression he wore. His voice had been rather pained too when he asked his question, she thought, and instead of answering, asked,
"Are you, husband?"
Presumably he took that for an I'm fine, because he moved again then, easing himself back a bit and then pressing back into her again. Jetta bit her lip and waited, but there was nothing. No pain, but no pleasure either. Just that strange, uncomfortable sensation.
"Am I hurting you?"
he growled. Pausing again.
"Nay,"
Jetta assured him. Nodding, Ollie eased out again. A little further this time and then slid back in. He watched her face as he did this time, and not sure what he expected or wanted to see, Jetta tried to smile. She suspected it was the wrong expression when a breathless laugh slid from his lips. But then he moved one hand between them. To just above where they were joined and began to caress her again. Her eyes immediately widened incredulously as her earlier excitement instantly burst back to life. It was as if it had just stepped aside to allow her to adjust to this new experience, but was eager to return. The next time Ollie moved, the uncomfortable sensation was negligible, and the time after that, Jetta found herself pushing into it. After the fourth move, she couldn't bear to not participate more and rose up on the bale to wrap one hand around his neck and pull him down for a kiss. Ollie complied at once, his tongue sliding between her lips to whip her excitement to a frenzy as he began to pound into her hard and fast. This time when Jetta found her release and cried out, her husband cried out with her. Although the sound he made was more of a roar. His legs must have gone weak as hers had earlier, because he then sort of collapsed against her, forcing her onto her back and following her down. He quickly rolled them both then, though, so that she rested on top of him instead of him crushing her. He also held her close and kissed her forehead, then ran his hands gently up and down her back. Jetta sighed. And snuggled against him, and then stiffened in surprise.
"What is it, love?"
Ollie asked, and she could hear the frown in his voice. Tipping her head back, she peered at him, uncertainly, and then said,
"You're still..."
She cut herself off with a blush, unable to say that he was still inside of her and still hard. He had no compunction about saying it, though.
"Eh? I'm hard still and inside you."
"Oh."
She wasn't sure what to say. She had no idea if it was normal or not.
"I was aroused quite a while,"
he pointed out gently when she didn't say anything, but didn't relax against him again either.
since before the ceremony. 'Twill take a while to go down.
Oh, she repeated, and then asked, is it normal? I mean, you did...
Aye, I did, he said with amusement. And aye, 'tis normal. For me, anyway, he added dryly, his eyes closing. Jetta considered that, and then asked,
does that mean we can do it again?
Eyes popping open, he jerked his head up and stared at her briefly, and then asked, do you want to do it again?
Aye. Please,
she said solemnly. Well, oof, he gasped when she placed her hands on his chest and pushed herself upright.
Sorry,
she muttered, realizing she'd knocked the wind from him briefly as she'd shifted to straddle him. "'Tis fine,' Ollie said quickly, reaching to tug at the neckline of her gown. Jetta glanced down in time to see him pull the material under her breasts, leaving him free to cover them with his hands. Closing her eyes, she bit her lip and shifted on top of him, as he cupped and squeezed and kneaded her breasts, and then toyed with her nipples. "'You're so beautiful, love,' he growled, and raised his knees behind her, tipping her slightly forward and more firmly into his hands.
"'So are you,'
she whispered, opening her eyes and planting her hands on his chest to balance herself as she shifted over him, experimentally lifting herself slightly and then easing back down. Ollie chuckled with disbelief at the claim, and pinched her nipples lightly as if punishing her for what he considered an untruth, but then said, touch yourself. Jetta only realized her eyes had closed again when those growled words had her blinking them open. Go on, he urged, covering her breasts again and squeezing eagerly. Slide your hand down and touch yourself. Show me what you like best. Jetta swallowed uncertainly, her movements briefly ceasing. Please, he added solemnly. Not wanting to disappoint him, Jetta reluctantly removed one hand from his chest and moved it down to touch herself tentatively. Close your eyes and pretend it's me, he urged. Only you're directing my hand. Jetta closed her eyes and pretended it was him caressing her, and was surprised to find it did make a little difference. Her fingers now pressed more firmly, and moved around her most sensitive area as he'd done, and then along either side of it and back to go around and round again. That's it, Ollie growled. Aye, move how you want, lass. Take your pleasure from me. 'Tis yours. It was only then Jetta realized she wasn't sliding up and down on him, in the same kind of action as he had used with her. Instead, she was all over the place, moving up and down from side to side, forward and back, and her movements were no longer tentative. She was grinding herself into him, riding him willy-nilly, one hand between her legs and one now clasping one of his wrists for balance as he kneaded her breasts. She suspected she was giving him little pleasure with her actions, but damn, it felt good to her, and she was so close. And then she crested the mountain she'd been climbing, and her mouth opened on a long, ululating sound. The moment that happened, Ollie released her breasts, clasped her hips and pounded up into her hard over and over, prolonging her release and then joining in it with a shout of triumph. Jetta's heart was still thundering in her chest when she collapsed on top of Ollie, completely spent. She knew he said something to her then. She heard the rumble of sound in his chest under her ear, but she couldn't make sense of it. She was exhausted and drifting off to sleep. We should really join the others for that toast, Ollie said reluctantly, once he had enough breath to speak. He wanted to get the suggestion out before Jetta asked to do it again.
He wasn't sure he'd be able to walk again after another round. The lass had a powerful passion. Realizing she hadn't responded, Ollie frowned.